Just as a quick aside, it's been fun for me to look back at my homily notes from 3 years ago and realize this is our second jaunt through the three-year cycle of the Gospels together. Because the way that they do this, they break down the readings into a three-year pattern. So after 3 years of weekly Mass attendance, you've basically gotten all the broad strokes of Scripture. Congratulations. And now we go again. And it's actually an interesting struggle for a priest. Oh boy, I got to come up with something new. Some lessons are best repeated, others changed, some deepened. Today we're going to try to deepen it. 3 years ago, looking at my notes, I shared with you why this dishonest servant wasn't like put on the hit list by his master, but the master was like, good job. What? So this servant calls in the people who owes money to his master, reduces how much he owes to the master, and the master is happy? What's going on here? If you remember 3 years ago, I shared with you, scripture scholars that follow how economics worked at the time of Jesus, when they studied this, they realized when they referenced the different amounts that were owed, what's happening is this steward is taking off the commission that was going to come to him. So when he talks about, you know, basically the steward's going to take the stewardship away from this guy, I can't trust you, you're going to get fired, you have to make an account, you owe me, your master, the money that you're supposed to get for me because of the sales you've been doing with the people in town. The dishonest steward was like, what do I do? I'm not strong. I'm too proud to beg. So what does he do? He takes out of what's owed to his master what was coming to him and focused only on collecting the monies that went to the master. The master lost nothing because the servant humbled himself and sought no gain. And that was my homily to you last year. The spiritual metaphor being, do we seek to give to God what belongs to God, seeking nothing in return, trusting that if we give to God what belongs to God, we in turn, the Lord will give us what we need and should receive. So therefore, when it says at the end of the gospel, you cannot serve both God and mammon, is Jesus fundamentally making a statement against money in and of itself and against people with wealth and rich people? Actually, no. But it's how do you use that wealth? I've come to know over my years many a people who have tremendous wealth, who live this gospel, who do wonderful things. I'll never forget when I was in seminary and I saw the rector, Father Canary, helping this, you know, retired elderly woman who had a hard time walking across the street. And I asked Father Canary, who is that? Who are you walking with today? And he said, oh, Mrs. Walgreens. You mean Walgreens? Yeah, Mrs. Walgreens. She owns all the Walgreens. She's one of the biggest contributors to the seminary. She's helping you get ordained. I'm sorry if that sounds like a business plug, because there's a lot of things Walgreens sells I'm not happy about. But the point being, there's things that we can do with our money that show us what we serve in terms of how we spend it. Do we give generously? Or do we simply seek to accumulate not just money, but prestige and power, reputation? That's what the mammon is. So therefore, in a real way, we can say, instead of you cannot serve both God and mammon, you cannot serve both God and power. You cannot serve both God and the desire for prestige. You cannot serve both God and the longing to be seen as a strong, powerful person in society. All well and good, that was 3 years ago, but the deepening I wanted to take on today comes from our first reading. You may be sitting there saying, you know what, Father, I do remember that homily from 3 years ago. I do remember when you preached on that. And you know what? I did detach my heart from the mammon, both spiritually, physically, within the world. And Father, I haven't seen the Lord lift me up yet. I haven't seen that sense of ascent. You know, and what prestige I did have is gone. And I haven't sensed that sense of glory kick in my life. Dare I say, to use our first reading's allusion to the moon as a metaphor, the moon is new, meaning it's dark, and I see darkness. And especially within the world we live in today, and that's the power of the metaphor, that slowly as the moon goes towards full, the night slowly lightens up. If you don't experience that in the city, go out into the country on a new moon night, and then wait and go back to the same place on a full moon night. You'll get the sense of the difference of how things are lit up when the moon is full. What will we see when what is in the dark is illuminated? And from our first reading, will we see treachery, envy, exploitation, selling people into slavery? Is that what we will see when the new moon comes full and our world is illuminated? And that, to us, points out the danger of following Christ. If we allow our hearts to be removed from the power, hunger, and the prestige, and we feel in return we receive nothing, there can be a temptation to go back to the power, back to the prestige, back to the things that we knew. That, okay, maybe, you know, it's not the best of things, but at least I knew where I stood in society. I knew where I stood with my friends. Okay, I looked not to have the attention drawn upon me. Now I feel like I'm nothing. At least then I knew I was something in someone's eyes, even though if in my heart and my mind I knew it was the wrong path. Welcome to the heart of someone who struggles with addictions. Welcome to somebody who grew up in an abusive environment, and for whatever reason, they don't want to grow up in that abusive environment anymore, but every time they try to get out, they find themselves in an abusive environment. Even though we know those situations are not healthy for us, it's what we know. It's what we understand. And there can be that temptation to go back and to go back. It's frightening to step out and trust in the Lord. It's frightening to take that step to say, okay, Lord, I'm seeking nothing in return. It's all yours. It's frightening, especially for us that live in the United States. Rugged individualism. Will your own future. Be in control of your destiny. Fill in whatever other Americanisms we can have. Do I love our country? Absolutely. We need to thank God every day for the fact that we live within freedom. But there can also be a trap within that. We can mistake truth for power. What is truth? Who's got power and who doesn't? Even though up here we may know that that's wrong, in our daily lives when we live out that reality, do we really cling to what is true? Or do we long for power? Dare I say our country, dare I say the developed world these days, is addicted to power. Who has it, who doesn't? And that is the reality on the global sphere. That's the reality that can happen within our homes, our places of work, everywhere. Sadly, as for those of you who may follow the news, as the war in Ukraine rages on, as Ukrainians are taking over lands, if you've seen, they're finding pit graves of civilians, non-combatants, who have been tortured and murdered and thrown into pit graves. Over what? The pursuit of an ideal, the reestablishment of a nation long forgotten, a thirst for power? Now, when I look out here, I don't see anybody who's trying to spark war against a sovereign nation. But I ask you today, what is the temptation to power we all face? And we all do. You know? If you ever want to see it on full display, walk into a room of five priests. And you'll see that play out pretty fast. Where did you go to seminary? What parish do you have? What ministry are you doing? And I say that lightheartedly. But what's that temptation to power in your life and in your world? And what do you long for the most? To be glorified by the Lord or to be glorified by the world? Pray with that this week. Pray with that this week so as we live our life, we don't fall into the trap of longing for success and acclaim in the eyes of the world, but instead to be lifted up by God's grace. Even in that process, if we feel tempted to go back to what we knew because we see darkness in pursuing the Lord, at first, realize that darkness eventually gives way to light. So when the moon is full and what was hidden in the dark comes to the light, the Lord will not see plunder and ruin, but he'll see you. He'll see me. He'll see the faithful who have loved the Lord and resisted that temptation to power and instead clung to one another and to God and the truth.